Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Women and strokes. It is a growing worldwide problem that we'll be talking about a little bit later in this program. But first, Chris Kremer has been a frequent guest on this program, usually talking about the community work his organization Beyond Housing is doing. He's president and CEO. Beyond Housing takes a multifaceted approach to community improvement, including helping people attain affordable housing, financial education, foreclosure intervention, and developing youth programs. Chris has just been recognized for his work with the Focus St. Louis 2014 Leadership Award, and Chris Kremer joins me in studio. Congratulations to you, Chris. It's well-deserved.
Thanks, Don. I appreciate it.
I know you're a very modest person.
I'm still not sure I belong in that list of, Frankie Freeman and William Danforth and a few others. So it's still a little strange for me to somehow think I'm in that company. But I will continue to work hard to maybe make sure I earn my place there over time.
Well, it's well deserved, and you are with an illustrious group, no question about that. Well, let's learn a little bit more about Chris Kremer. You and I have interacted on this program a number of times. But I really don't know much about you other than the work that you do. What put you on the path that took you to where you are right now?
Yeah, there's no great epiphany story here other than I grew up in St. Louis. I can answer the high school question. So I went to University City High School, went on to Washington University, got a degree in urban studies, and my father, the engineer, and my older brother, the engineer. I think the direct quote was, "What the hell is that? And what kind of job will you get, son?" And I told him I kind of missed that engineering gene growing up, right? My job as a kid was to hold the other end of things as my dad fixed stuff around the house and then get him a beer. So I found things that I enjoyed. So the Green Urban Studies was maybe I'll do city management. But I got my first job at the Housing Authority of St. Louis County in 1986. Making $16,800, and thought, wow, that's the greatest thing I've ever seen. My first 3 years, I worked in the Section 8 department, and I saw low-income moms and their kids every day. Mm-hmm. They'd come in with their paperwork, and I'd put them in the system and give them a list of homes that they might be able to rent and said, good luck. And what that did, and I didn't recognize it at the time, but it gave me, oversimplified, but gave me the chance to see kind of the two faces of poverty. One, folks who were still very excited about the future, and we're motivated, like, wow, I got this roof over my head and good things are going to happen. And the second group was life had just beaten them up. You're going, whether the system didn't work, whether it's poor choices that they made, they were just like, I'm done now. I got a roof and I'm just finished. I have no more motivation. So I was fascinated by both those two subsets. And then learned about the Beyond Housing back then when it was known as Ecumenical Housing Production Corporation. And job came open and I threw my hat in the ring. And as the story goes, here I am.
The rest is history. That first group of the subset you just mentioned, people who thought, here I am, now I can go and I can achieve something. Do you think for the most part that the members of that group did move on and achieve something? Were they able to?
I think it was a mix. I think clearly some achieved things that they went to school and got better jobs and positioned their kids from success. But I also know it's difficult today, right? The systems that we've set up in our country doesn't always work well for those who aren't started, don't have a good start, and don't have a great support system and resources to get them there. The idea of bootstrapping, I think, is a little outdated today, right? Again, I think systems don't always work well for folks. And part of what I've tried to do in my 20-plus years of doing this is, can we provide resources and create opportunities for folks to achieve the dreams and aspirations that they have? Because on its own, the system doesn't work well for folks.
And it's tougher today than it was certainly 20 years ago or whatever it was that when you started Beyond Housing. I mean, as we talked about off the air, young people coming out of college or coming out of high school or whatever are stuck just reaching the first rung on that ladder.
Yeah, to have the reality this could be the first generation that may not have a better life than their parents is a little sobering to say, this perpetual growth that we've been able to have for many, many decades and for several generations that, our economy has kept growing with a few bumps along the way, but has kept growing consistently. And, what do you do with those folks who have their aspirations that have said, including, look, my oldest graduated from college at the worst possible time ever. And he's we've had conversations, was college the right thing to do? Because look where I am at now. And that's a tough conversation to affirm. Yes, it was the right thing to do and it will pay off over time. It's just, again, As you said, Don, it's going to be a slow start to get you on your path. And if you figure that's happening for middle-class folks, what happens to low-income folks in low-income communities? It's even exacerbated for them.
That's exactly what I wanted to ask you with regard to what you were seeing. I mean, you are in your job seeing a lot of these people. And how is this dynamic playing out for them right now?
The challenge is how do you provide both resources that are real and tangible and then continue to fan the flames of hope that says, yeah, you can achieve great things, knowing that the economy, while a little bit better than when it was on the bottom, we still have a long way to go. So, you know, again, you want to get people past, the harsh economic realities and say, we know if you do these kinds of things, if you go to school, if you position yourself for post-secondary education, if you think about the skills you need to be in today's and tomorrow's job force, that's going to position you for success. And that's a hard conversation, but we believe it's still the right conversation. And I'm the quintessential optimist, so we'll keep pushing to provide opportunities for folks.
Yeah, your ears must have been burning last week because we did a program on achieving the American dream. And we had some gentlemen from the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis here. And we talked about a lot of things, such as we were talking about here. But your name came up, and Ray Bishara, who is one of the guests that I had here, talked about you and what you're doing to help achieve that dream.
One example is something that a group called Beyond Housing here in the St. Louis area is doing for kids in the troubled Normandy School District.
Chris Graymeyer and his friends?
Yes, yes. They're doing great work. Every kid who enters kindergarten in the Normandy School District gets a $500 college savings account automatically. It just happens. You know, so $500 is put into that account. It comes from an anonymous foundation. The money is locked up for college, but then they use it as a teaching tool to teach about college, to teach financial basics. It's a magnet so other people can contribute. And so I'm really excited about that, but it's going on around the country.
This sounds like quite a program. How is it working?
Well, again, as you heard Ray say, it's really about positioning kids and their families to think differently about the future. To say at kindergarten, there's money put away for you and you can have college be a reality versus not thinking it's possible because maybe no one else in your family has ever gone or the financial constraints of your life don't let you believe that, oh, yeah, we're going to have some additional resources. So, again, we believe in this notion of positioning people for longitudinal success. So not only are we doing the college savings accounts, but if you go earlier, we're doing work in the pre-K space. And as you go up through elementary school, in the middle school, working with Big Brothers Big Sisters, with our friends at Wyman, with our friends at College Summit. So again, I'm trying to build this continuum that says there's no magic pill, no silver bullet to making community better, to making individuals stronger. It's an intentional integration of a number of things that we hope will play out to be a model that not only works for the kids and families in Normandy, but as a model that can be replicated other places.
Is this the way we're going, Chris? Do you think that we're going to have to rely more on private institutions and nonprofits rather than government to deal with some of the problems that we're talking about?
I mean, I think there's no magic to who can fix this. I think if we're honest with ourselves, for the last 2 to 3 decades, have we really moved the needle on any significant challenges that we said are important to us? And I believe the sobering answer is probably not. So whatever we've been doing, quite frankly, hasn't worked. So how do we think about things differently? Yes, it's the public sector. Yes, it's the private sector. Yes, it's the not-for-profit space. And again, how do we think about what's important to us and how can we affect change that is long-lasting and not transactional in nature? And you know, when I got the award the other night, my message to the audience was I asked them to find that space that makes them a little uncomfortable, because I believe the uncomfortable space is where the great things happen. That whether it's partnering with another organization, which is or stretching the limits of your own organization, or just not being sure is the thing that you're doing really going to work, but you believe if it does, it can have great impact. So I asked people when I thought about the history of my 20 years, we stay in uncomfortable spaces, not because I like us to be there, but I want us to be there because I think that's where we need to be to really impact change.
That's pretty much characterized your approach from the very beginning.
It has. I mean, from from just getting the job was, I think, made people uncomfortable, right? I was 31 years old, never worked at a not-for-profit, had managed one other adult in my non-restaurant life, and they took a chance on me, right? So I know it made some people uncomfortable. We changed our name. We started as only a rental housing organization to a community building organization, and that made people really unnervous because they said, oh my goodness, people have tried to do this community stuff, and they failed, and we stayed with it, and we merged with another organization in 2003. We built a grocery store, about to build a movie theater, and we've done a lot of things. We work with public education. Oh my goodness, people said, don't work with public education. It's just too hard, right? People have tried and failed. But again, we kept pushing ourselves to say, where do we think we can have the biggest opportunity to have sustainable and systemic change, and keep trying to be in those spaces? Be smart about risk. Don't be foolish. Do our due diligence, but not be afraid to jump. I'm normally the lead jumper, right? So because of the size of our organization, I got people who will walk out to the ledge with me and try to point me in a couple of directions, like, that might be a good place over there, Chris. Just don't jump randomly. Mm-hmm. But again, when you look at either the issues of poverty, public education, you pick your topic, we haven't done a great job at solving them and moving the needle. So I want us to try things that are different and new, not for the sake of new and different, but we believe if we do that, we'll have better success.
Well, you're right in the middle of a very sticky situation, working as you do within the Normandy School District. I want to get into that, but let's take a break first so we don't have to divide what you're going to say about that. Chris Cramer is my guest. He is the recipient of the Focus St. Louis 2014 Leadership Award. He's the president and CEO of Beyond Housing. We'll come back and continue our conversation. We'll have a few minutes to take some calls, too. If you'd like to converse with Chris, do so at 382-8255. It's 382-TALK, or send us an email at talk at stlpublicradio.org. We'll take a tweet also at STL On Air. Back with Chris in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again. Welcome back as we continue our conversation with Chris Cramer of Beyond Housing. Before we continue with that discussion, though, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. Vice President Joe Biden will arrive in St. Louis this afternoon to highlight the economic benefits of a planned overhaul of the National Park Service's Gateway Arch grounds. Biden will be joined by Interior Secretary Sally Jewell and Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois. Missouri Governor Jay Nixon faces a deadline today to sign or veto legislation to overhaul the state's criminal laws and to create new classes of felonies and misdemeanors. Nixon has indicated that despite misgivings, he would not veto the bill and instead allow it to become law. And the St. Louis Rams will introduce their new draft picks to the media at the football team's headquarters today. That will include seventh-round pick Michael Sam from the University of Missouri. Sam became the first openly gay player to be drafted when St. Louis took him in the final round on Saturday. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our discussion with Chris Cramer. Tell me, Chris, about your Vision 24-1 project that encompasses the Normandy School District. Then we'll talk about the schools themselves. But how is 24-1 going?
Well, it's going well, Don. I think it's a big lift and it's a big challenge, right? The idea there was to say that the idea that home matters, and home is a whole lot of things, including housing, education, health, jobs, and economic development. So how do we intentionally look at all those issues in a targeted geography? And our targeted geography is the boundaries of the Normandy School District. So we've done a lot. We're about to close on the financing. We're going to build a four-screen, 375-seat movie theater and a community services building on the northeast corner of Page and Ferguson in Pagedale. That's a catty corner from a grocery store, and a senior building and a bank that we constructed several years ago. We're also going to break ground, I hope, in August on a 53-unit senior building in Pine Lawn, directly across the street from Barack Obama Elementary School, and we'll do some intentional intergenerational programming, taking the seniors into the elementary school to do tutoring and mentoring, and then we'll bring the kids over to the senior building and, again, keep it full of life and energy. And then during construction on both those projects, we're working with the school district to do some experiential learning. So we're going to take particularly some math classes and some science classes and say, let's get on a construction site and get, you know, again, a real life experience of the theoretical stuff you've learned in the books, but now let's take it into the real world. So not unlike my middle child, who always asked me, why do I need to learn this stuff and why will I ever use it again? So here's, you take, you know, again, the stuff you're learning in school and say, here's the practical application of that in real life. So a lot of great things happening on the physical construction space. You know, we're doing health programs. We're doing a variety of other different things. And by this Friday, we'll have a sense of what's going to happen to the school district because the state legislature will finish its session. And they're in the quite frankly, as we speak, I bet the conference committee is meeting on what's going to happen, not only to Normandy, but to the whole transfer issue.
When you say we're going to build this, we're going to build that, a movie theater and what have you, who is we? Who's funding it and who's behind it?
The movie theater and community services building, we're getting new market tax credits. We have both Enterprise Bank and U.S. Bank are our bank partners in securing and then purchasing those credits. We're also getting a grant from the Port Authority of St. Louis County to make that project go. And then we have an investment from the 24-1 Community Land Trust, which is a entity that we created several years ago that's bringing some additional equity to the table to make that project work. And then the senior building is low-income housing tax credits allocated from the state of Missouri. It's a federal program allocated on a per capita basis to states. So we're getting those tax credits. And we're partnering with the St. Louis Equity Fund, and those are a long-time partners who will, in essence, buy the credits, and their investors get the tax benefits from that. We're the general partner in that particular partnership, and you know, we'll manage the property for the 15-year compliance period. So we, like we always do, we aggregate capital. We assemble partners together to try to, you know, again, make these things come to fruition.
But it's beyond housing that is not only driving the project, but planning it and coming up with the ideas of what to build and overseeing the whole.
The plans on what to build come from the community. Right. Mm-hmm. The community tells us here's what's important to us. Now, once they do that, then our job is to go get it done. We're the driver. We're the planner. We're the folks who would kind of put the money together to get it done. But we're driven by the voice of the community.
How has the community responded? I mean, obviously, you've got a lot of projects going, but I'm talking about at the street level.
Yeah.
How are people responding to these plans, and what's been accomplished so far?
Well, what we get by and large is enthusiasm and interest, but we also get some folks who are still a little wary of, you know, who are these folks and what are they doing, and, you know, have they really talked to everybody, and are they legit, and will they go away? Mm-hmm. Part of what happens in community is lots of folks, well-intentioned, have come in and, you know, promised some things and had some ideas, but didn't stick around. So, you know, we've been around long enough where I think we've earned a little bit of credibility. And again, we're building trust in community. But at the end of the day, we still have to understand that we work for community. Not too long ago with the movie theater, we got out ahead of the city. And I had to go to a city council meeting in front of the mayor and a whole group of folks and raise my hand and tell them I'm sorry that we got a little too excited about the movie theater and got a little ahead of you. And we had to, you know, hit the pause button and make sure they were comfortable with everything that we were thinking about relative to doing the movie project. So, again, people will always be wary. Because again, we're outsiders and we don't live there, and they've had bad experiences, and we understand that our job is to, you know, we use the language that community building happens at the speed of trust. So trust is earned every day by our work.
We can see, I think, the other side of the coin with the McKee project. There's a lot of distrust there, and it's been kind of stalled, if you will. Intentions may be very, very honorable, but people don't quite buy into it, it seems.
I think the one big juxtapositioning of that project and ours is we started with talking to the community for a year before we did anything. And that's just kind of the way we think about the work is we work for community, and they live there. They know the problems, and they know solutions. And we think that if we would have said anything, you know, to Mr. McKee and his team early on, would have been, you know, talk to the community before you do anything else. We wish him all the success. I mean, there's a big challenge, and he's obviously made a lot of personal commitments, both you know, resources and his time to make this happen. So we clearly wish him nothing but the best.
We have some calls. I want to go to them, but I just want to go back to the Normandy Schools District situation, the whole transfer issue. I know you've been following what's going on in Jefferson City, and it's been follow the bouncing ball. It's been all over the place. But what are your thoughts about the kinds of things they're talking about?
Well, look, we can't pretend like there hasn't been 20 years of things haven't gone well, right? So we have to acknowledge that. But we also have to acknowledge that the new superintendent with a brand new reformation plan that, quite frankly, is different than just about anything else that this region has seen relative to how kids are going to do better. It is, you know, the middle of May. School starts again in August. So I don't see a reasonable chance to do anything dramatic between now and August. So the hope is that they fix the money side of it, the transfer issue. The hope is that they push for accountability structures, because this district and we as a partner need to be held accountable for success of what's going on. And my hope is that we put the kids' interests first, and 80% of the kids and their families decided to stay in Normandy, and we think we should honor that and give them the best education possible.
What a disaster it would be if the system went bankrupt.
It makes absolutely no sense, you know, and I think, you know, again, unintended consequences. But I've been surprised there hasn't been more conversations about the receiving school districts taking this money that they didn't really need. Mm-hmm. Clearly, they shouldn't be harmed by, you know, taking kids that they didn't ask for, and they should clearly be covered and have their costs be covered plus some. But at the end of the day, there's so much money that just went to their balance sheet and didn't go to instructing these children. So it seems to me that it was a great teachable moment for kids in those districts to say, we're going to do the right thing and not harm the other children who go to these districts and that school district itself.
I think one of the great stories out of all of this is the fact that is the kids themselves. They've all handled this very well with regard to the receiving districts. You know, there were all those concerns early on that there are going to be these tremendous racial problems, if you will. Didn't happen.
Kids always are better teachers than us adults who seem to get in the way all the time.
Right. Let's take some calls. We'll start with Tom joining us from Afton. Tom, go ahead.
Thanks, Don. I'm glad for the opportunity to put a question to someone who's thought and worked so long on helping people get out of poverty. And my question is, I've been following the journalist Paul Tough for several years, who writes about the Harlem Children's Zone and what kind of educational programs can help get children out of multi-generational poverty. And when I first heard about that approach, I thought, wow, they figured it out. They figured out how to do this. This is going to be translated all over the country, and this model is going to be transplanted to cities all over America now. And I'm not sure that's happening. I'm not sure it should happen. And I just wonder what you think of that work and that approach.
Well, we're clearly, I think the best part about the Harlem Children's Zone, it gave excitement and interest to, can we be very innovative about tackling poverty? I think their results haven't been as glowing as everyone would have hoped, but clearly they've seen some success, and they've seen some positive movement, and they've spurred folks like us and many others across the country to be in the same kind of space. So I think they should be given credit for spurring the kind of activity that we're undertaking now. And I think all of us are trying to learn. If you look all across the country, there's a growing movement of what's called comprehensive community initiatives. And they've been around for a number of years, but we're really starting to see this next kind of the second generation of initiatives like ours that hopefully will learn from others ahead of us and will continue to push for the kind of results that our children and our communities deserve. And while we think we're onto something in our initiative, we're not there yet. We still have a ways to go. But the way we've approached it, linking housing, education, health, jobs, and economic development together, we think is the right approach, the harder approach, but we think it's the right approach to have communities and children and families as a byproduct to be strong and successful.
One of the things I've always heard about Jeffrey Canada and the Harlem Children's Zone is the fact that there are some benefactors in the New York area who have been extremely helpful to him. I mean, billionaires who are pumping a lot of dough into this project, and that's not happening everywhere.
No. And the other interesting thing, and again, I'm not an expert in the Harlem Children's Zone, but it's clear that they've done a lot of things on their own. Right. They've said, we're going to control, you know, our charter school. We're going to control everything else. And our model, quite frankly, is the polar opposite of that, is we're asking as many partners as we can join who have evidence-based practice, who are good at what they do, join us in this work, because we know we don't have the core competencies and the scale and capacity to have the kind of success we want. So, again, different kind of models. Again, I'm hopeful that ours is a model that can be successful and then replicatable.
Is anybody else trying it that you're aware of?
I mean, does
in
the,
our
the,
area?
In our area, no. Yeah. I mean, there's been pieces of it, like the St. Louis Graduate Program, which certainly focused on college access and completion is a component part, but nowhere near the scale of cradle to career and then doing all the physical redevelopment work that we're doing. Yeah.
Let's take another call. Lynn will join us from St. Louis. Lynn, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. And Chris, I heard you speak a couple of weeks ago at the Boeing Foundation. And one of the things that I thought you did a great job, and so did Randy Mayer, talking about was collective impact. And it got me to thinking, do we in our area have a map of all of the nonprofit resources in our area, which would include, you know, who they are and their contact information, but also what services do they offer? And I'm wondering if this exists because I think it could help us in the nonprofit sector better connect with each other as well as those in the communities that we're trying to serve so that we could improve our service delivery as you are doing at Beyond Housing in the Normandy district and then hopefully improve the community outcomes in whatever area, not only education, health and human services, but how do we better connect arts organizations, environmental organizations, et cetera? Thank you.
Yeah, Lynn, that's a great question. And I don't know if there's one definitive list. Clearly, the United Way has a lot of information about a lot of organizations, both those who are recipients of United Way funds as well as other organizations like ours who provide a variety of different services. But I'm not sure if there's one place that captures it all, and I think it might be a great thing for someone in the region to look at. But I think the broader point about how we work together and the point that I tried to make at that Boeing presentation was how do we find the right partners and be willing to really engage them in conversations about how do we work together and not simply chasing the grant dollars and not simply saying, oh, yeah, I can say to a funder that I'm working with you know, Organization A, but really say, how do we work together? How do I understand what you do? How do you understand what I do? And how do we ensure that our resources get the maximum benefit to the families that we serve? And again, that's the uncomfortable space that I think all of us in the not-for-profit world and, quite frankly, the for-profit world need to be in is how do we really work together and you give up a little bit of control and a little bit of, you know, what's in it for me for the greater good. And that's a hard conversation to be, but I think it's the place that we need to be.
We're going to have to leave it at that. Chris Kremeyer, continued success in the work that you're doing. And once again, congratulations on that very prestigious award, the Focus St. Louis Leadership Award for 2014. Great talking to you.
Great to be here, Don.
That's Chris Kremeyer. Thank you. Coming up, women and strokes. It's a bigger health problem than you might think. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.